is Enterprise Times Podcast. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking to Sridhar Iyengar, Managing Director of Zoho Europe. We're going to be talking about cloud economics. Sridhar, hi. It's great to talk to you. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Thank you very much, Steve, for having me here. It's a pleasure. To folks who are listening in, I'm Sridhar Iyengar, and I head up our European operations for Zoho. For those who are new to Zoho, just to let you know, Zoho is a provider of cloud business applications that can power various aspects of your business, ranging from sales, marketing, HR, IT, finance, and so on. We're here in Europe for the last 5 years, and my responsibility is to build up the business here. I'm based here in the Netherlands, happy to be on the podcast.
We're talking about cloud economics. It's often seen as having two primary principles, economies of scale and global reach. That view focuses on the value in financial terms that the cloud can deliver. However, there are different approaches that potentially offer far greater value. Sridhar, what's your view of cloud economics?
Talking about cloud economics is a very broad subject. And to be honest, we're a company who are 27 years old. So in that sense, we were not born in the cloud era, but we grew into it and have certainly adapted to it. If you look at it, the earlier promise of the cloud back in, let's say, early 2000 was economic or financial benefits, where the value proposition was it would be cheaper to run an application and businesses are interested on cloud. That was advantage of moving to the cloud, and that was the promise. Over a period of time, we've realized that cloud has a broader purpose and enables a lot more things just than financial efficiencies. On that point, on the financial topic, what we have realized and what we see and hear across different customers and even the market outside is beyond a certain point in terms of scale, cloud doesn't necessarily offer financial benefits if you're going on certain public cloud platforms. The broader purpose we've realized with cloud is, of course, there is financial aspect of running businesses on cloud for our customers, even for us as Zoho. We run our own entire business of 13,000 people serving 80 million customers, users from the cloud. But then beyond that, it gives us and several different organizations in the world the agility and flexibility to be located where we want to be, to work from wherever we want to, and have that amazing flexibility. We've seen this especially come true in the last few years, pandemic and post-pandemic, which basically forced people to relocate, go to different locations or work from home or really work from anywhere. That's where we've seen this excellent example of cloud being an enabler of work from anywhere. There's, of course, the financial aspect, and there is agility in terms of working from anywhere, but also for organization to roll out new services, cloud is a great enabler for that.
You talk about working from anywhere, but what I'm seeing is a lot of organizations are realizing that actually, although remote working is great, face-to-face relationship building is just as important sometimes. Zoho has a slightly different approach, doesn't it, in terms of you've got local hubs. Did you do that to create that face-to-face team building?
You're absolutely right on that, Steve. Work per se can be done and delivered from everywhere or anywhere. We are all human beings. We need the social interaction. We also need a lot of collaborative working, collective decision-making, and sometimes it's easier to do all that when you're sitting face-to-face or sitting in a room interacting in person with colleagues. And that human connect is irreplaceable. So what we've seen with technology and cloud is it gives you the tools and the means to interact with each other, but nothing can replace the face-to-face engagement and the human touch, for which you still need to meet and see your colleagues, your customers, and your partners. In that sense, the new world is a mix of both. It's a hybrid model where just for the work, you have remote working tools, you have technology that can let you work from anywhere, but in between, you need the human interactions for discussions, learning, collaboration, and then sometimes decision-making as well. This is something we've adopted at Zoho, is that we've also used this opportunity, especially post-pandemic, of working from anywhere to set up remote offices, rural offices in different rural locations in India. Traditionally, if you look at a rural village, you know, countryside, all your young people are moving to bigger cities in search of jobs and opportunities. And that results in some kind of talent erosion. The only way you can sustain that local rural economy is to retain that talent. And that means create jobs in those locations. And that's what we've done. We've taken our offices, our business to these rural locations in terms of development and building all these software. We hire locally in these rural areas. The backbone of our collaboration and the virtual fabric of the company is the cloud technology that powers and helps people communicate across the world, regardless of where you are. But these rural offices have become local communities where we've hired local talent, groomed them, nurtured them, built up these economies, and the local economies and these rural areas prosper as a result of that. These are also connected to our larger offices in bigger cities, but not just in India, but also internationally. So sitting here in the Netherlands, I can talk to one of our colleagues who's developing something in a rural village in India. That's the power of the cloud.
I'm assuming there must be some challenges with that. What about connectivity? Because cloud's great when you have connectivity, but if you don't have connectivity, it's a bit of a problem.
You're absolutely right. For all this to work, you need the IT, the internet infrastructure to be in place. In a lot of countries, governments have realized the importance of that. Every country is on its journey towards moving to a digital platform, digital world, and investing in these IT and internet infrastructures. We've seen this certainly in several parts of the world where we've set up our own offices. All you need is that. You need the digital infrastructure, the internet infrastructure for not just software, but also communication and collaboration. And we've been pleasantly surprised by what we've seen. To make all this work, you need the right tools. Along with that, just these two cannot work in isolation. You also need some kind of an organization culture to make it work together, to ensure that people are connected well, they have an understanding of the overall objectives to what you want to do as a company, what is the direction and all that. So the cultural part is the underlying fabric from an organization standpoint.
How do you get that cultural engagement from effectively the standing start from people who probably are barely aware of Zoho in a rural location, though?
That's a good question, Steve. If I have to single out one thing that we would be proud of and that we would leave behind as a legacy, is would be the culture. So tomorrow, let's say we lose everything, we just have the culture left. That's probably the greatest asset that we have to build it up again. That's something that we've built, or any company can build, only over time. It doesn't happen instantly. It's a way of thinking, a way of doing. It's a behavior of an organization. How people understand is by staying in the company for long term, but also observing their peers, the leaders, the top management team, exhibit those same behaviors that they preach, understand that, internalize that, and then follow that. That collectively becomes the organization culture. But this requires everyone from top to bottom to align to that direction on which the company is set and act in that same consistent manner, for the leadership team to constantly talk to their people, talk to their team members, to inculcate that thinking into each one of them. Because someone joins new, they would have no idea of what culture means. What is important to a company is something that you have to learn, you have to experience, and then you basically then internalize it.
You mentioned people there, and that's surely the other facet, but how do you know you've got the right pool of talent within these rural hubs that are capable of doing the work you need?
That's a very often repeated phrase that you hear. In today's world, it's very difficult to get the right talent or to hire the right talent. So at Zoho, we've taken a bit of a contrarian path that there is no right talent, in a manner of speaking. What that means is, you can't expect to find the right talent. You have to build and nurture the talent that is right for you. And that's been our approach for the last 27 years. What we've always looked for is, we've looked for people with the right mindset, the right attitude, with a sense of not just humility and a sense of eagerness to learn, positive attitude to everything in life, because if you're in a long-term business, you will see the ups and downs as well. We hire for those attitudes, but then skills are something that we can teach. And this is what we have done. This is something that we've also tried as an experiment around 18 years back. We launched an initiative called Zoho Schools, which has evolved into Zoho Schools of Learning, where we would take young people with no formal academic degrees. They never went to college. And we would take them in. We would train them for 2.5 years, teaching them English, computer science, algorithm, mathematics, all the things that they would need to become great software developers, while at the same time paying them a stipend to sustain themselves and their families. And then we would basically absorb them as interns into our product teams. And they would continue the learning, learn as they do it, basically experiential learning. And then after 5 years, they would become very good software engineers and perform very well on the job. This has been a great experiment for us. It's been 18 years in running. Around 15% of our own engineering staff comes from Zoho Schools. We want to take this to other locations across the world as well. All the time when they learn, there's always a close guidance and mentoring for these young people. And that's the way we have built this talent.
You mentioned humility there. Is there a danger you're creating a digital elite in these locations? Because obviously the salary levels of a software developer are normally a lot higher than a farmer.
In today's world, that's absolutely true. What we've realized is the power of the cloud that allows us to base our offices anywhere is able to also distribute talent. A rural area where we would set up our office would benefit from the prosperity created as a result of the jobs there. And it would have a trickle-down effect of percolating to different disciplines that would be required to support our offices there and the broader community. Because we have an office, not just the office, but we also would support some local schools. So for example, in India, again, some of our rural offices have a supporting school, and they also have a hospital for serving the local public. But that's a way to give back. But coming back to your question, there is inequality, and it's very difficult to erase that instantaneously. But what you can do is distribute that wealth, distribute the prosperity, not to just be concentrated in a large city, but also to other rural areas of the country.
How does that help with diversity within the organization?
When you talk about diversity, it basically has different facets to it. Diversity in terms of gender, diversity in terms of also the profile of workforce. As I said before, we never hire for a specific skill or based on academic credentials. The entry point for us is very open in that sense. The second is the fact that we have our office locations in rural areas, or these are cloud technologies that could enable people to work from anywhere. We have recently launched a program where we encouraged women who left the workforce due to family reasons to come back and join. So that segment of the population to also be part of this, that promotes the sense of inclusivity into your workforce.
Obviously, it's been really successful in India. I've read a lot about it in the last few years because you've been publicizing it more. How does the same approach work in other countries? You've set up a hub in the US, I know, but what about some of the European countries you're in?
With us, it's always everything is an experiment, and it's always baby step, organic building, one step at a time, building a house brick by brick. Here in Europe as well, we've got local offices, starting from one in the UK, of course, in Utrecht, where I'm based, and in the Netherlands, in Germany, in France, and in Spain. One of the common factors or common theme you will see is in each of our locations, each of our offices here in Europe, in addition to our global offices, is not in the biggest, the most populous city or in the center of all the attraction. You always tend to be a bit off-center because you're off the hype radar, and you can build sustainable organization in these locations. Sustainable not just for us as a company, but also for our employees to build their own livelihood in these areas. That's important if you want to build a company for the long term. And that's always been our goal, to be long-termish. So some of the experiments and activities that you see in India, some of these initiatives which have taken off very well, will be adopted. I wouldn't say replicated, because dynamics vary from one country to another country. We have to see what parts of that, what elements of that would make sense in Europe. There's a lot of diversity even within Europe. What would work in France, for example, may not work in Germany or in the UK. So we have to see what makes sense and then take those elements and apply it. But there is some common themes, right, in terms of how you hire, how you set up the offices, how you engage with your customers, what kind of company that you want to build, what's your approach to the market. All that remains constant or remains very consistent. And that's how we will go about it. But it will take time.
How and why should governments support these kinds of initiatives?
That's actually a good point. My own experience in the last 5 years while I've been in Europe, I've seen several government initiatives that are pushing their organization in the country. Could range from small, medium businesses to medium and large businesses to go digital. I think everyone has to realize the benefits and the direction that people have to go digital. It's not just about physical carbon footprint, reduce that, but also become more efficient, faster decision making and all that. Just giving advice or guidance to companies to go digital is not the solution. You also need partners who can assist these organizations in their digital journey. How do you transform your organization from a paper-based office to a digital agency? That's something we see ourselves as playing a role in partnering with these government initiatives, with these directions, and assisting companies to go digital. It's a win-win. We see that as a symbiotic relationship.
You've done that quite a lot recently in the Middle East, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. We are open to it wherever governments are promoting these ideas. We have had successes in the Middle East, yes, tying up with governments. We've had successes in different pockets.
You mentioned carbon footprint there. Did you measure how this approach can help with the carbon footprint of Zoho and how it might help with other companies as well?
Carbon footprint or being sustainable comes in different forms. One is, of course, if you look at it, we run a cloud company. We run data centers. Right off the bat, our data centers are powered by green energy. That's very important because data centers can be huge consumers of power, electricity, and all that. The second thing is our rural initiatives also reduce footprint of large expansion into larger cities. That's another way. Zoho as a group of company also has its own rural farms where we have our employees spending part of the time in the farm. We have vegetables and animals and all that. So that's another way of getting back to your roots.
Are there any other initiatives you've done in this area that are different from the norm?
The rural farms, schools. Schools actually are a really nice initiative. Also because teaching skills is a crucial part of our existence or purpose. In today's world, government schools or public schools can struggle because of lack of good teachers, and we want to be able to help wherever it's possible.
Are these digital schools, or are they, in a sense, more face-to-face schools or a combination?
These are physical schools, but they also use digital technologies at the right age. But there are two types of schools. In India, we run, let's say, primary, secondary schools in combination with local authorities. Those are physical schools where some of our own faculty teach. The second is the Zoho Schools of Learning, which is physical but uses a lot of digital technologies. And that's great in bridging the gap of young people trying to adapt to the current industry needs and to serve the industry needs, basically.
Are there other benefits to organizations from taking this approach?
The reason why we've taken this approach, Steve, is we found that this is our purpose in terms of giving back to the community. Zoho has taken, of course, a view that we want to build a business for the long term. We want to build a business that can last and that is resilient, that also gives back to the community. For any organization that is looking for leaving behind legacy that will last a lifetime, it's worthwhile to explore and take certain elements of this. There are a lot of companies who have done this before us. We are not probably only the unique company, but we do want to leave our mark on this planet.
And you mentioned right at the beginning of the conversation, there's a cost of using cloud and the traditional model in the sense of using a public cloud vendors is not necessarily as rosy as one might think. But I'd just like to understand a bit more about that. Zoho runs its own data centers, that's impressive, but surely it's got the same cost issues that the public cloud vendors have, and they've got an economy of scale there, surely.
I'll talk about cost in two ways. One is specifically on the data center and the public cloud and the hosted model. And second is the broader topic of why this is important for us as a company. On the first part, what we, as a company who hosts 80 million users, all these different applications, we run our own data centers. These are servers that we buy. We've developed the expertise of running, managing these data centers with the tools. That was important to us because what we realized is over time, if this is the core of our business, data center are core to our business, right? Because that's at the heart of your cloud technology, the cloud stack. We have to own it and own it in sense of know the nitty-gritties, the nuts and bolts to provide a superior customer experience. And by customer experience, higher availability, better response time, and all that. The second is the cost part of it. What we realized is running these data centers, hosting these applications, while it may be attractive to do it on a public cloud as a startup in the initial phase, it's more convenient that you don't have to deal with running the data centers. But over time, as you scale up, these costs will add up and they will start affecting your top line and bottom line. This is the realization that several companies have come to over a period of time as their infrastructure has grown. And they realize that the cost of paying a public cloud provider, it becoming a liability for them. And it has a huge cost to that, which bites into their either profits or their bottom line. We had a realization a long time back, and that's why we took the path of owning and running our own data center, because we are in this business for long term. But if there's a company who's doing it for 5-10 years, as several companies are looking for a quick exit, they may not do it for their own reasons. But there are certainly cost benefits if you have to operate at the scale that we do. That's like serving 80 million customers, and these will add up. So why is this important for a company, or why is this important to Zoho? And that's the second part of the question I was going to address. The reason is if running this on our own infrastructure and managing this gives us this cost advantage, which we can pass on to our customers. And that gives us a competitive advantage in our business as against competition. The value proposition that we offer is great software, but also that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. And how can you do that if you stay disciplined to run your business efficiently, look at all the different contributing cost factors and keep them low? One part is, of course, the hosting providers, the infrastructure. If you're running a SaaS company, that's one very big part you have to think of. Second is, of course, what we look at is things like real estate cost. I told you earlier about us not being located in the heart of the city, in the downtown of big popular cities. That avoids having these real estate costs for us. Third is, of course, a lot of companies spend crazily, and we have seen this in the last 10 years of this, the bubble, is crazy spend on sales and marketing. Our focus has been spending more on R&D and products, and engineering and support and all that. That's the path we have taken, because longer term, that's what matters to the customer. Providing great software matters more than the sales and marketing message that you put out. Sales and marketing is, of course, important. But sometimes companies tend to lose their sense of balance trying to balance sales and marketing versus R&D and engineering. Decisions we've taken is because we want to be a very attractive partner. I call ourselves partner instead of a vendor to our customers, because that is what we want to be. Viable vendor who's in the business for long term, providing great software. And we can do that only if we keep our costs low. Cloud economics is one core aspect of that.
You spoke about Zoho's approach to coming to the market. Why did you take that approach, and what's the alternative? that you didn't take?
The approach we've taken can be considered unique, Steve, just because a lot of it goes back to building up a business for long term. That means we have to be sustainable. To be able to do that, you have to run a company with efficient cost model. What we see in the industry is companies running with an inefficient bloated cost model. Bloated cost is basically, we've seen a lot of financial driven companies that trying to grow at all costs, at any cost. That's been contrary to the Zoho approach, where we've taken a more organic approach, a product-led approach, than a sales and marketing approach. Having the freedom to be located where we are, including rural locations, can help you reduce cost and run efficiently if you want to look at building up a business for long term. The way we've used cloud technologies to build company, to run the company, including being present in remote villages, even the way we run our own data centers, are a testament to how we can run the business efficiently. That includes a product-led growth model instead of a sales-led growth model. That will work only for companies who have a very long-term vision of running the business. It won't work for someone who's in this for a short term, let's say 8 to 10 years, and flipping the company.
I take it what you're saying then is a sense that the Zoho costs model is more efficient because people are paying for just the usage of the application and they're not having to pay for the public cloud solution and the profits that the public cloud vendor wants to generate off that hosting.
That's absolutely right. So there are two parts to this. If you're using on-premise software, you would need to pay either you host it yourself or you host it in an external hosting provider, and there is a cost to that. What cloud has done is taken that cost away and transferred it to the SaaS provider. The cost hasn't gone away. It's just gone from one pocket to another, in a manner of speaking. So that's one thing that's happened. Now, for a company that is offering these SaaS services, if they have to take up these huge costs of hosting the software, they can't provide affordable software because they have to look at a way to justify that investment and pass it on to their customers.
If business leaders are listening to this and want to take a similar approach to Zoho within their organization, what are the first steps they need to consider? I appreciate you've been doing it a long time.
That's a great question. From an organization standpoint, the takeaway for the audience, if you are looking to build up a business, definitely look at cloud, because that gives you the agility to take business decisions very quickly, to serve your customers very quickly, but also flexibility for your employees and for your businesses. The second part is, when you're on the cloud, you choose a technology provider or a solution provider who's in the business for long term, is available close to you and has a very good understanding of your business. So as Zoho, one of the things that we've done in the past 7 years is we call the theme transnational localism, where we've expanded to international geographies with the goal to be closer to our customers so that we can understand and serve them better. So this is very important for customers. You need to have a partner who can understand you and close to you, not several thousand miles away. And that's very important because you have to understand the local market, the local dynamics, needs, and maybe regulatory, which is very specific to your country and so on. That's one aspect. And of course, viability of your partner, right? Your technology partner, your SaaS partner, your cloud partner has to be viable as a company, because you don't want to be running around chasing another or evaluating another vendor or another partner in a couple of years if you're core supplier or core partner runs out of business. You have to make a wise decision, choose a partner that's viable, runs a business that is not just honest, but also affordable and viable for them to be in the business for long term. And that shows that commitment to be sustainable, but also brings in innovation, because technology is changing at a rapid pace. We've also seen what pandemic can do in these situations. Someone who can keep pace with technology, stay ahead of the technology, bring that innovation to your company. That's the kind of partner you want. So these are all aspects that any organization should take and consider as inputs for basing the business.
If I'm a business leader now, and I want to take the same organizational approach that Zoho has taken, are there any steps to doing that in the sense of setting up these local hubs as they grow? Is there a tip that you could give to those business leaders?
Absolutely. What we have done in terms of giving back to the society, it also benefits us because we become more geographically distributed, we distribute the talent and all that. And this can be done by any company. The more companies do this, it would benefit the society a lot more because it requires that kind of humongous amount of energy and resource and time and investment. You just need to find a location that is underserved. You just need to find a place where you can build up this community. You need to be in the community. We need to have your leadership team there to nurture this because you can't outsource this. You can't do this from remote. So you have to be there. Your leadership has to be there. This is something that we have done as well. So all our hubs, rural and urban, are anchored by our own leadership. And that's important because that's how they would know how to nurture this community, how to build it up there. This can be certainly done by anyone, any leader in the world today, and depending on their location. Pick a location, start building up, nurturing community. Skill building should be very high on your agenda because that's what is required. Skill building in context of what is required for your industry, and be able to build up those skills, build up the talent, which you can use building up your own company, but also for the larger community.
What's the next step for Zoho on this journey?
So as you've read and seen, Steve, we've tried out different initiatives in India. So we will be picking up elements of that in terms of our transnational localism strategy and applying that to international locations such as Europe and so on. That's one thing. The second thing is, as our products become more mature, widely adopted, in addition to building the depth in it, we're also building the breadth, which means that breadth in terms of integration, not just between themselves, but also with third party, building and solving several complex use cases for our customers. Overall, value proposition becomes extremely strong in terms of the problems that the Zoho platform can solve across a variety of industry and function. It's also evolving as a platform that it's not necessary that only Zoho has to build it. It enables third party to build on top of the platform and offer these solutions. To give you an example, if there's a solution provider or if there is a system integrator in a specific vertical where Zoho doesn't have the expertise, they could build on top of the Zoho platform, take a lot of the existing Zoho services or connect with other third-party services and offer these compelling solutions just because they have the domain knowledge to solve those problems.
Sridhar, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. It was a pleasure for me to be here, and I hope everyone on the channel who's listening to this enjoyed it. Thank you very much.